theory doctrine. What's the going kind of theory? Is it about balance? Like, if you can find a substitute, policy analysis theory go that way, and there's a federal balance analysis go that way?
I'd say forget about the federal balance for now. I said the going theory, no matter where you're at, is you've got to start, the first thing you have to do is you've got to identify the potential conflict that's out there. This issue only arises because somehow, some way, there's some federal law out there that looks a little, or federal practice that looks a little bit different than what the state courts do. And procedure in federal court is governed by a couple of things, mainly by the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. That's the main source. Sometimes there's actually federal statutes. Congress is considering, I forget what it's called, it's the Anti-Lawsuit Abuse Act or some goofy name like that currently. If that gets enacted, that's going to be a congressional statute that will affect procedure in the federal courts. Sometimes it's like this. Sometimes it's federal common law, that there are gaps in the civil procedure, in the rules of civil procedure. Judges interpret those gaps and kind of have common law decisions about how to interpret those gaps. The biggest example we'll talk about this next semester Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 8 says, most of the time, if the plaintiff wants to file a complaint, start a lawsuit, all the plaintiff has to do is include a short, plain statement of the claim. That language will not mean anything more to you in 6 weeks than it does right now, I can assure you. Short, plain statement of the claim gets interpreted then by judges. And there's a slew of common law decisions trying to explain how much fact you have to include to have a short, plain statement of the claim, including two recent Supreme Court decisions, which require plaintiffs to provide a lot of facts. Okay, so this is the landscape of federal procedural law. You only have an Erie problem. If you have a diversity case or a supplemental case, and the state that you're working with, the state law you're working with, does something a little bit different than this. For instance, requires pure notice pleading. Plaintiffs don't have to say anything. You can file a complaint that says, she breached a contract, period. You guessed, defendant, right? And so now you've got something that's a little bit different. And so now you have a potential Erie problem because you have to figure out, does the plaintiff have to put a lot of facts in the complaint per federal law, or can she just put a little bit per state law? That's step number one. Then you have to figure out what is actually in conflict. This state law that says you only have to put a few facts in there, does that conflict with Rule 8? Right? Is that requiring something different than a short, plain statement of the claim? Or does it conflict with these U.S. Supreme Court decisions interpreting Rule 8? Because the answer to that question changes the outcome of the case. As a practical matter, if you're the lawyer, you got to argue this on a nuts and bolts statutory interpretation. Here's the language. It only says short, plain statement. It doesn't say all blah, blah, blah from Iqbal and Twombly. It says short, plain statement. And the state rule says short, plain statement. And so they're the same thing. There's no conflict. The real conflict is here with the common law, with the Supreme Court's interpretation of short, plain statement. You got to be able to do that, just literally pointing to the language and making plain language interpretation arguments, like Scalia-esque. The other thing you have to be able to do, though, is you also have to go a little bit further, because that alone will not win the day. if you want the federal court to apply the state law, right, if you're the plaintiff here and you want to have to plead a little bit, not a lot, you want to get the court to believe that it's the federal common law that's causing the problem. In order to get the court to interpret, to by your interpretation of Rule 8 in the state law, you have to go beyond the plain language and you need to start talking about the purposes behind the state law and the extent to which you are able to point to not procedural things, but real substantive things. Efforts to increase or decrease the amount that people can recover. That's what the defendant's really saying in Shady Grove, is this is about the amount that we can recover. And if it's about the amount we can recover, that's really about the right. That's not about the procedure. The more that you can make arguments that the reason that the state's doing is what it's doing is to achieve substantive goals, the more persuasive you are that the court should buy your interpretation. That's step number one. If, on the other hand, you're the one who wants the federal rule to apply and not the state rule, you got to do the opposite. You got to be able to dismiss any of those arguments that there is some substantive purpose behind this. And that this is really two states that just have different procedural visions of how much notice is required before a lawsuit can begin. Whoever wins this step, that's a long way to winning the war. Because if you can persuade the court that the conflict is here between the federal rules or, worse yet, heaven forbid, a federal statute, then that's pretty much the end of it. No court is going to refuse to apply a federal rule of civil procedure. The only way you can get around the federal rules of civil procedure is to find a way to argue that you can apply both. Yeah.
If they would have heard off Cohen after they heard Shady Grove, is there a good chance that it came out the other way?
I don't know. I really don't know the answer to that because it's hard for me to reconcile why and it's not all different justices, why Ginsburg is able to get the majority in Gasparini and why she can't get it in Shady Grove. I think the answer is that it would probably come out the opposite way. I think because Rule 23.1 has so many similarities with the New Jersey statute, I think that ultimately a majority of justices would not be willing to say that those are two different things. One of the things that works well for Ginsburg in Gasparini deals with Rule 59, which is motions for a new trial. Which looks a lot like this. It just has the rule itself just has a really vague standard that says courts should grant new trials for the reasons they always have. And it's a little more specific than that, a little more eloquent than that, right? But not all that much. And so that doesn't say anything. And so she's able to get a majority of the judges to believe or to agree that all the reasons why you grant a new trial really come from here. And so since they come from here, from common law, we can look at the state common law just as easily as we can look at the federal common law, and whatever the state common law reasons are for granting a new trial, we can read into 59 without reading 59 out. And I think Shady Grove, she just has that's a harder sell because the two rules, if you put them side by side, they look nearly identical. The New York Civil Procedure Act and Rule 23 are not all that different except for the New York courts have tacked on that one provision at the bottom that says, oh, by the way, you can't do this if what you're doing is a penalty. So step one, you've got to identify the potentially conflicting laws and figure out whether they really do conflict with one another or whether they can exist side by side. No matter who you are, where you are, that argument, if it's really going to be successful, has to involve both statutory interpretation and some policy analysis. That's what gets you over the edge. That's what makes it persuasive. Step number two is, if you get to the point where you're talking about positive federal law, whether it be rule of civil procedure or federal statute, being in conflict, incapable of applying that with the state law, then the federal rule has to apply. If, however, you're down here and you really can think of a plausible way to interpret a federal rule such that you can apply the federal rule and the state rule, then I think there's another place where you introduce state purposes. Because now you're talking about the twin aims. This doesn't look all that different than what I was talking about in Byrd either. The more that you can say that a law, a state law, predictably affects the outcome in a lawsuit and predictably affects one party versus another, the more you can say, the greater your argument that you need to apply the law to discourage forum shopping. It's just common sense. A plaintiff is more likely to choose federal court to avoid a state law if the plaintiff is relatively certain that the state law will cause him to lose. The more that you can point to the state's purposes, discouraging strike suits, frivolous lawsuits, the more likely it becomes that the lawsuit really is, or the rule really is predictably burdening one party. Think about the New York rule. The point behind the New York rule is to limit the extent to which defendants like Allstate can be liable for statutory penalties, to prevent aggregate liability for those penalties, to discourage class actions. There is only one side that loses as a result of the New York rule. That is a rule that only hurts plaintiffs. That makes sense because the purpose of the law is to decrease defendants' liability. The more that we can say 100%, the only way that this affects outcomes is to prevent some plaintiffs from bringing a lawsuit, the more compelling your case that if you don't apply it in federal court, they'll be forum shopping. Now, of course, you can't get there because the court's hung up here. But assuming you could, then you've got a good, compelling argument. And so that, again, I think it doesn't matter where you are. You want to be able to do twofold. You want to be able to articulate in just a common sense, here's how I tell someone who's not a lawyer why this will discourage forum shopping. But the extent to which you can tie that to some substantive purpose makes that a better argument, makes it a stronger argument. Does that help any? Okay. Other questions? Other things? Okay. Well, I'll be around. If you are having a hard time reaching me, though, please feel free to email. As I said, I'm happy to stay here on Saturday for as long as I need to, but I'll stay here until 2 o'clock for sure, and then if I need to stay later, that's fine.